Our time is always well invested, never wasted when we gather together on the Lord's Day to worship the Lord. Your presence is appreciated this morning, especially for one of our several visitors. We most appreciate your being with us today. We're glad that you are here. After the service's conclusion this morning, we'll be celebrating two of our own who are graduating high school this year and moving on to a new chapter of their lives. A chapter, a journey, a lifetime that will be fraught with things expected, things not so much expected. Times good and bright and happy and joyous, and times sad and somber and disappointing. That's just what life is, what life contains, as this same book we just read a moment ago from Ecclesiastes, in the third chapter, the writer, the wise man Solomon, reminds us that to everything there's a season and a time. And life has its seasons, has its times. And as we consider such, either from their perspective as they move into their new adult lives, or as we consider our own as we're living our lives as best we can, we have to answer one question to be able to have the real contentment, the real substance of meaning we long for in life. And the question is, what is the purpose of our being here in the first place? Why are we here? And as was mentioned earlier, the lesson this morning, why are we here, is not about why we're here right now in this building. That is another subject for a different time. But I'm talking in a larger, more philosophical sense. Why are we as humankind here to begin with, and individually, as individuals of humankind, what is our purpose for living in this life? And you might think, well, I'm no philosopher. I don't have an answer to that. Well, you may not as a philosopher, but I tell you this. If you want to be happy, joyous, and contented, you have to have a sense of why you're here. And have a sense of fulfilling the purpose for which you've been put on this earth. That sense of identity and purpose makes all the difference in one's life, especially going forward into adulthood. And this book of Ecclesiastes deals with that very subject. And as we just read a moment ago, the conclusion is before us. It's right there. In this case, spoiler alert, we're looking at the end before we start at the beginning. What is the real answer to the question? Well, it's to respect, to fear God. It's to keep His commandments. That is man's all. That's what we're here for. That's what it's all about. To respect God and keep His commandments. And the why behind that? Why do we fear God? Why do we keep His commandments? It's because our purpose is, in so doing, to become more like the God we serve. Our journey in life, from first to last, especially from the first of our accountability and especially moving into adulthood, our journey is for the purpose of becoming like our Maker, being partakers of His divine nature. And the only way to do that is to respect Him and do things His way. Problem is, as Solomon shows throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, that's not the way most people see things. That's not the decision many come to in terms of the reason why we're here. And so he deals, as the chapters unfold in Ecclesiastes, with various answers which seem to be right, but they reveal themselves to be so very wrong and even damnable. he reaches such a low point in this book that by the first of chapter 4, he says, really, it's better to be dead than alive. Now, that's a low point. But then he doubles down on that and says, no, what's better yet is never to have been born at all. Now, I'm thankful this lesson isn't ending just with that, because I can't imagine a more somber, melancholy, negative, morose thought than that. Good if we'd never been born, but if so, a lot better to be dead than alive. But the reason he's saying that is because he's considering these false narratives of life, these wrong ideas about what life's about. And every time you go down one of these wrong pathways, you find yourself at a place of nothingness. In fact, one of Solomon's favorite phrases is striving after the wind, or vanity of vanities, emptiness of emptiness, says the preacher. All phrases describing the vacuous nature of a meaningless life. Well, if you haven't got the right purpose for your life, if you haven't got a right reason to be here, that's what life seems to be like the further you get into it. I mean, it's hard to know, looking forward into life, what it's supposed to be about. It's a lot easier looking back on a life as to what it should have been about. I've talked to many in the last days and sometimes hours and moments of life, and never had anybody tell me, you know what, I wish in my lifetime, I really, above everything else, I really wish that I had made more money. Haven't heard that once. Or you know what? I wish in my life that I had done more. I had had more pleasure in my life. I have never heard that. Or I wish I'd read more books and I knew more. I never have heard that. In fact, what I have heard is I wish that I had a stronger spiritual life. I wish that I were closer to the Lord. I wish my relationship with my Savior were better. I wish I'd built that bridge instead of burning it by these wrong choices. Well, those wrong choices are the very things that Solomon is considering in this book before he gets to that wonderful, grand conclusion of respecting God and doing things His way, fearing God and keeping His commandments. He talks about wisdom in chapter 1, worldly wisdom, understanding the way the world works. And you'd think, without thinking it through, that's a wonderful way to live life, trying to amass an understanding, not just of knowledge of facts, but of understanding how those facts work together as puzzle pieces to make the completed puzzle, to understand then what everything is about, how everything works together. Now, the problem with that is the fact that we can't know it all. God does, we never will. He begins this book in chapter 1 by using the image of the system of water, evaporation, and going back into the clouds from the seas. Many rivers, all the rivers run into the sea, and yet the sea isn't full. We say after all these centuries, we figured that out. We know how that works. Well, in many respects, we've learned the way things work, but we've never, ever come to grips with why they work that way. Who made them work that way? Of course, God did. But the more wisdom and knowledge we accumulate, well, as he ends that chapter, he says it's nothing but grief. And many of you who have lived a while know what I'm talking about. I would like to think that those of us who've lived longer know more than those who've lived a shorter time. That through the benefits of experience, trial and error, making mistakes, and living life, we've come to a point where we know some things we didn't used to know. We have a comprehension of things we didn't used to understand. And yet, the problem with that is that the minute you've got some answers, nobody really wants to hear the answers from you. They want to figure it out themselves. The minute you try to share your wisdom with somebody else, no, that's not the way it is. That's not what I think. But then even if they do listen, the problem is the more you tend to understand, the more questions that come from that understanding that you can't answer. God has given us a built-in governor, as it will, to the capacity of our understanding. There are matters beyond the capacity of our thought. I'll just be frank with you. Some things you'll never know. You can go all the schools, get all the degrees, spend all the time in reading books and volumes on various subjects, and I promise you those who know most about their field of study have more questions about their field than you do, because the more you learn, the more questions you have, and the more questions remain unanswered, and in many cases, unanswerable, because the secret things belong to God. Deuteronomy 29 and verse 29 tells us. And God has given us minds to think, but not to His degree. And we may know a lot, but we'll never know it all. And so if that's your reason for living, you're going to live and die and never know it all. And even if you think you do, you're going to live and die and nobody will care. In fact, as Solomon says here, the fool and the wise man, they both die and they are both forgotten. So what's the use in being wise if you're not remembered any better than the fool who died? Well, I hate to say it, but it's true. But then in chapter 2, he moves into a different subject. He talks about pleasure and mirth and song. And if anybody had access to this, it's Solomon. The richest man of his time, the wisest man of all times, except for Jesus. As he said, what his eyes, nothing was beheld from them what they wanted. He had houses, he had mansions, he had castles, he had servants, he had horses, he had everything he wanted. There's nothing he wanted he couldn't have. And so you think, well, from that and because of that, nobody in the world could ever be happier than Solomon was. He's the one that said in chapter 4, better not to have been born at all. Because that's not the reason for living, just to have pleasure. Because it's so short in the time it lasts. And what gives you pleasure now, the next time you need more of the same thing, it'll give you the same amount of pleasure. And after a while, you become numb to the sensation of it, but you're addicted to the reality of it. And you realize too late many times that this road to pleasure is one of nothing but perdition and problems and, yes, sometimes pain. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. It's like a striving after the wind. And as with wisdom, this striving after the wind, it's kind of like, ever had cotton candy at a fair? Oh, it's so big on the stick. And it has a sweetness to it. But the first time, you remember the first time you ever took a bite of cotton candy? And you had that stick there and a big old, you take one bite and you, where'd the bite go? The moment you take it, it's not there. I'll have another one. It's not there. It's sweet. Oh, how sweet it is. It gets all over your face. But every bite's just like the last one and just like the next one. Nothing to it. And you wonder, well, how can it look like that and be like that and not be there? Well, that's the way it is with life as Solomon sees it, if we're looking at the wrong solutions for life's purpose. You take a bite into wisdom, well, really, there's nothing there. You take a bite into pleasure, well, there's nothing really there. And maybe you're ahead of me because you're thinking, well, I've got the answer. I've got the answer. I just need more money. If I had more money, I'd have a lot more to do now. And there are things I could do I can't do now. But Solomon deals with that, and Solomon knew about that because, as I mentioned earlier, he was, if not among the, perhaps the wealthiest man in the world for his time. We could spend time we haven't got this morning just describing the opulence of that man and the affluence he enjoyed. But in chapter 5, he will say, he that loves silver is not satisfied with silver. Or he that loves gold, abundance with increase. In other words, the more you have, you think that'd be enough. But the more you have, the more you want. It's like the farmer that just wants the piece of ground that's next to his, which is fine till he gets that piece. And then all he wants is the piece of ground next to his. You get money and you want more of it. But even if you could be satisfied with what you have in terms of money, money itself is like that cotton candy. And Solomon talks about that, how there's nothing to it but the sight of it, because it's gone, especially if you have a family, as he mentions it, it's gone as soon as you have it. Remember that first check you got as a employee somewhere, and you looked on the line there and saw, well, a lot of it's not even getting to my check. And then you take that check and you start doing things with it, and you realize there's not as much check as there is stuff that you want to do. And you add the family responsibilities of a place to live and food to eat and insurance to have and things you need to have to survive, and you realize, I've got more life and I have money. There's always a place for it to go, and as someone wise told me years ago, it was a fairly wealthy person that told me this. He said, all of us are poor in our own income bracket. And there's a truth to that. Even money itself is like cotton candy. And so when all is said and done, what does matter? Well, I promise you, like we've mentioned, if you live a life based on nothing but accumulation of money, or a life lived upon nothing but I want this and I want this pleasure and I'll have it now, or if you live a life in accumulating knowledge and wisdom and nothing more than that, if that's what life is about, you're ending up like Solomon says, it's really better to be dead than alive, and best yet, not to have been born at all. But then Solomon brings us to the wonderful grand conclusion. All those things aren't what life's about. Not at all. And he wants this information to be known by young people. He doesn't want us to learn this the hard way after a life lived wrong. He wants us to learn this early so to live a life spent well. And so this last chapter starts with the words, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, while the evil days come not. Before you get old and infirm and incapable of doing things for the Lord you could have done. But whether you learn it early or late. And I remember Brother G.C. Goodpasture making the remark one time that it's possible for one to save his soul having lost his life. And what he meant by that was the fact that you can live your life for the devil and you can turn to the Lord and be saved. You can save your soul, but oh, the life has still been lost. All those years wasted. And so what Solomon is saying here, you need to get this in your mind early on. As you're a young person starting out your life, if you live this way, you'll be much better off. And what is this way? Simply respecting God, fearing God, keeping His commandments, doing things His way. His ways are best. They may not be as publicized. They may not be as popular. They may not be as much in the news. But God's ways are best. You just ask a seasoned, older person, are God's ways best? Ask an older Christian who's lived a life of service to the Lord, are God's ways best? And they'll tell you to a person, yes, God's ways are best. So what's life all about? Let's become as much like God as we can by respecting Him and doing things His way, living according to His word. My friend, if you're here this morning and outside of Christ, bring your life to Him, submit to His will, and based upon the fact of His being God's Son, your willingness to turn away from your sins, confess that faith you have, be baptized to have your sins washed away. That's a wonderful way to start a journey of life in the right direction. Or perhaps as a child of God, you've strayed away and you need to come back. What better time than now to do so, if you need to, and come as together we stand and sing.
Hear the sweet voice.